Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Aaron Judge sounded off to the media yesterday at Yankee spring training and was asked about the Instagram post that he has since removed, in which he congratulated Jose Altuve on winning the 2017 AL MVP. If we recall, Jose Altuve, in a landslide, was named the 2017 AL MVP over Aaron Judge, who was the runner-up. Since then, we all know what's unfolded over the last few years and the last couple of months with the Astros. Aaron Judge removing the congratulations because of the Astros sign-stealing scandal. Here's what...
Pretending that he didn't fizzle down the stretch.
Right. No, it was stolen from him, according to Cody Bellinger.
I forgot that you got tired, big fella, towards the end of the season. Yeah.
Here's Aaron Judge on removing the social media post.
I took it down like right when I think the story broke out, right when I think Mike Fiers came out and talked with Athletic and stated that, you know, this is what was going on in 17, you know, and once I heard that, you know, it's just sick to my stomach, you know, just to find out, you know, I had a lot of respect, you know, for those guys and, you know, what they did and, you know, especially, you know, what they did for the city of Houston and that whole organization, man, a team that was in last place and drafted right, got the right players in there and, you know, eventually, you know, got to the World Series. You know, I had a lot of respect for them, you know, the way they played, what they did. And then to find out that, you know, they cheated. You know, that didn't sit well with me and I just didn't feel like the post that I did really, you know, meant the same anymore.
So Aaron Judge clearly does not believe Carlos Correa when Correa says that Jose Altuve did not take part in the garbage can banging scheme.
Right, which is interesting because, again, none of the players that I've heard comment on this, at least the ones that have been critical in the Astros, really seem to be paying too much attention to what's going on, which is their right. They're, you know, they're focused on their games and whatnot. But when they start weighing in on it, I think it's becoming increasingly clear, if not 100% ironclad, given all the different information that I've taken in, because at the very beginning was, as you know, kind of just gobsmacked as everybody else, is that Altuve didn't participate, didn't benefit from the cheating, other than maybe his RBI stats, and that's not like that's Altuve's calling card or anything. You know, you might say that the environment around him might have been more conducive to individual success because guys around him. So he had guys on base to drive in. He had guys that were creating stress around him and behind him in the lineup.
That's a good
point. Does he get better at bats or quality pitches? Maybe.
Sure.
You can make that argument, but for the most part, Altuve's numbers have stayed pretty damn consistent over time. Both pre-cheating scandal, 2019, when this same stuff wasn't going on, and Judge conveniently doesn't mention any of that and makes it more all about himself, doesn't he? Because when they're asking him about him versus Altuve, he just lumps Altuve in with everybody else. Yeah. And that's the part, that's the only thing I care about anymore. Honestly, if Manfred comes in and decides that, okay, strip the title, I'd be upset about it. But it's Jose Altuve, whose crime was not stopping the scheme, is being treated like he was cheating all along and benefited from it, and it's driving me insane.
I was thinking about this yesterday. Do you think that, because you and I have come to Jose Altuve's defense, I think a lot of people in Houston have, Jose Altuve's beloved here. Do you think at some point that athletes around the city start speaking out on behalf of Jose Altuve? Do you think, I'll just put the cards on the table. Do you think at some point J.J. Watt tweets something about Jose Altuve deserving the 2017 MVP? Do you think he gets support? These guys are always supporting each other cross-sport when the times are good.
Enjoying your honeymoon, J.J.?
He's back in Houston now.
Yeah.
He put up a picture of him welcoming his dogs home yesterday. It was cute. His dogs really love him. Do you think
dogs love everybody?
They're
calling his dogs sluts. They're friendly dogs. Aren't they like Labradoodles or something?
They are. Yeah. They really seem to like to see him yesterday though. but these athletes are all They're all gung-ho congratulating each other and injecting themselves into the situation when the times are good.
Yeah.
Do you think that J.J. Watt – do you think that J.J. Watt will ignore the fact that Aaron Rodgers took up for Ryan Braun back in the day and got burned by it to take up for one Jose Altuve, who has been positioned as a very close friend of his within the Houston sports world?
J.J. has, over the course of the last couple of years, kind of toned down his social media usage as much, and I think he's probably come to a spot where he's enjoying not being quite so attacked all the time. He made nice with the Barstool guys. What are the odds on him actually weighing in favor of Altuve?
Right.
I would say probably not that good. I don't think anybody on the Rockets is going to. I think at some point, though, let's put a time cap on this.
Okay.
I think over the course of the next 2 months, through the efforts of myself and legions of people on Twitter, and I actually was talking to a few people via DM the other day, some of the people that are doing videos and everything out there right now, I'm saying, listen, this is my tact at this point. When I talk to people outside the city, I'm not going to be angry or up in arms about it. I'm just going to keep presenting the facts and the information about Jose Altuve and just keep chipping away at it. To the point where it doesn't affect his legacy.
It's the long play.
That people will understand the actual... Because nobody's going to listen to you if you're screaming and sounding like a crazy homer.
Right.
So I think over the course of the next couple months, as things settle down, people are going to start to realize, wow, just because his teammates cheated shouldn't have given us free license to doctor videos, to come up with crazy conspiracy theories, to do all this stuff and make Jose Altuve the face of it. Just because he was the best baseball player on their team over the stretch of time. And I think, honestly, I would expect and hope for and request that at least a few people with actual journalism degrees will understand how unethical they were in some of this. And that somehow, wait a minute, oh, you mean just because the team was found guilty of cheating in 2016 or 2017 that maybe I shouldn't have just ran with everything anybody put on the internet about 2019. I would hope that some of them will admit they're wrong. And then maybe then, I would say 2-3 months from now, then after everything's calmed down a little bit, maybe some of the local athletes will start stepping up.
I just feel like, I get it. I think it's cool that I think it's one of the cool things about this city is that the teams do support one another within the realm of the athletes. The athletes, they seem to like one another. They congratulate one another when they get accolades and things like that. I just think if you're going to congratulate them, kind of on your social media platform, sort of inject yourself into the story there by congratulating, which I think is really, really cool, that if you're a prominent athlete, then at some point you need to, if you feel like it, you need to, if indeed you feel like that person is being wrong, then you probably need to post something. Support them in times of good and times of bad. Don't be a conditional lover.
Let me ask you this question. If Pat Beverly were here, would he support Jose Altuve publicly? And B, would he do a good job of it?
Cody Bellinger would be missing an eyeball right now. Beverly would have just stuck his thumb right in there and popped it right out.
I bet Beverly could play baseball. I bet if he had committed himself to it. He's got that wiry frame. I could see him be a good power hitter.
Yeah.
It's hard for these tall guys to get their arms around. I know he looks short on a basketball court. He's still a taller guy.
Yeah.
The other, that one, I saw that LA radio host ask, how could you even be a fan of the Houston Astros right now?
Oh, yeah.
I would say this. That if,
I replied to him.
If you have to ask that question, honestly, if you can't understand how somebody loving something doesn't mean that as soon as that thing that they love does something bad, they stop loving it. If you can't understand somebody loving something despite it making a mistake, then I'd feel that you're probably at heart a despicable person.
A despicable person and, as you've pointed out, a bad parent.
Probably a horrible parent and shouldn't be allowed to have children because you're only going to love your child until their first mistake. And show me the guy in the last 2,000 years that is without sin, and I'll gladly. Great, congratulations. Unless you're damn Joseph. Yeah, your kid is messed up big time.
Yep, absolutely. Unless you're Joseph.
Yeah, so unless Joseph tweets this out.
The guy was not Joseph. I checked his bio.
Really,
his bio said not Joseph.
That's really Joseph's biggest flaw as a character was we could never figure out how much he truly loved Jesus because you never really had to sit by as he and watch him make mistakes.
Make mistakes, We never got to find out how good a parent Joseph was. We'll check in West Palm Beach with Adam Spillane for a few minutes. He's our feet on the street down there throughout spring training. He's presented by Texas Bay Credit Union.
I know he wasn't his biological dad, but Jesus totally
that's
would
coming
have,
in.
Jesus totally would have insta'd, like, hey, you know, on his on Joseph's birthday, right. He'd be like, you know, you're not my biological dad, but you've always been my true father.
Right,
and
right.
And all of a sudden, lightning
like
bolts
Shaq,
and everything. Oh, yeah.
Like Shaq with the Sarge.
Yeah.
The same
yeah.
thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, de facto dad. Yeah. We'll check in with Adam Spillane. Boy, we're off the rails right there. Adam Spillane.
Oh, by the way, just real quick, since I just want to point out that Aaron Judge, he's somehow blaming a cheating scandal in which Jose Altuve didn't participate for why Aaron Judge didn't get the MVP.
Yeah.
Let's see. In the month of August, you know, when people are really trying to start figuring things out,
right.
He had an OPS of 680.
Ah, okay. Yeah,
his batting average 185 in August of 2017.
He was a souped-up pitcher, basically.
Yeah. Remember, he started his decline in July, and then August was miserable for him.
Yeah, we'll get to LeBron at some point. LeBron has no take on China, but he's got strong takes on Rob Manfred, whose name he doesn't know. He just calls him baseball commissioner. Let's go to West Palm Beach right now. And our boots on the street down there, as the promo guy likes to say. He's brought to you by Texas Bay Credit Union. Adam Spillane at Astros Spring Training in West Palm Beach. Adam, good morning. How are you?
Good. I'm good, Sean. How are you?
We're doing great up here in Houston. What was the big doings in Astros spring training yesterday? What was the if there was one big takeaway yesterday through media scrums, chatter around the batting cage, everything else? What was the big thing yesterday?
Well, there really wasn't any chatter. I mean, per se. I mean, there wasn't any one big topic that took precedence over the others. I just think that guys were happy to be back out on the field and competing. You got to see a live batting practice yesterday. You had 9 different pitchers get on the mound and face live hitters. Included in that was Jose Urquidy, who right now appears to be penciled in to be the Astros' fourth starter. Chris Devinsky threw. And we also saw Forrest Whitley throw against big league hitters. I mean, he faced George Springer. He faced Michael Brantley. He faced Jordan Alvarez. So we were in that portion of camp. And then you go down to the bullpen mound, and Justin Verlander, who did not throw his scheduled bullpen on Friday, he was back out on the mound. And he threw 44 or 45 pitches, so he seems to be doing fine.
Sorry, my mic wasn't working there because I hadn't pressed it on, Adam,
yeah.
Is the issue. Adam, Forrest Whitley, just, you know, based on what you've seen of him in years past, does it look like all this extra weight is affecting his motion at all or helping his velocity, anything like that?
You know, the velocity, I don't know. And they're not even worried about velocity at this point of spring. He did say, and this was on Friday, he said that when he threw his first bullpen, you know, things felt a little awkward at first, which is what he expected. I did ask George Springer how he felt that Whitley looked, and Springer said that Whitley looked fine. I think that they're happy with what they have seen of him so far. And the added weight, he added 15 pounds from the start of spring training last year, and he thinks that will benefit him more once you get into May, June, July, as opposed to February, March, April. So that's something to watch for down the road with Whitley. Let's say he gets off to a good start in AAA. I'm assuming he'll start the season in AAA. If he gets off to a good start and then he's able to maintain that good start, I think that shows that adding the weight helped him.
The other guy that made a big body composition change was Alex Bregman, who says he lost about 20 pounds. And I had thought when he got up to speak at the press conference that he looked a little bit trimmer, hard to tell with the baggy clothes that they're wearing. But does he look noticeably trimmer? He doesn't seem like a guy that had 20 pounds to lose.
No, you're right, and I didn't even notice it. I'll be honest with you. I had no idea, and I guess I'm not that perceptive enough to pick up on it. The one guy that I've noticed that had lost a pretty significant amount of weight was Chris Devinsky. But with Bregman, like you said, I didn't know he had 20 pounds there to lose. And he said that he did it in order to get off to a better start. He doesn't think that he has started the season strong the last 2 years. And I can tell you yesterday, he did hit a home run off of Cy Snead during live batting practice. And then he doubled off of him on the very next pitch. So it's too early to know if that will have any sort of an impact. But if it does, just remember that he came into camp a little trimmer than he did in the past. But I can't tell the difference.
Cy Snead will be suing the Astros 5 years from now when he finds out that Alex Bregman was stealing signs.
And he'll rat everybody out.
Cy Snead's going to get released tomorrow.
That's
all because of the cheating.
That's right. And this better not affect Chris Devinsky's strut from the bullpen, this weight loss. That's all I'm going to say about that. Adam Spillane joining us from West Palm Beach. Adam, how would you say the questions to these players are unfolding here when it comes to the sign stealing? Particularly, it seems like there's a new prominent all-star caliber player speaking out about this every single day. It was Bellinger last week. It was Mike Trout earlier this week. Yesterday it was Aaron Judge. are guys getting asked questions about this, and how thick is the cocoon down there from some of the noise from these other spring training camps?
Sean, there wasn't one question asked to an Astros player about anything that anyone else from another camp said yesterday. I think that everyone knows, at least it felt like most of the people that were here yesterday were people that have been here, and they know that they're going to get the same answer at this point. So the Astros aren't going to respond anymore. I mean, like you said, it's a different player every day, so you can just essentially put the same answer in for every single guy. Dusty Baker was asked about Nick Markakis, and you know, he didn't really want to get into it too much. He just said that Nick Markakis isn't a guy that talks about. He was surprised to hear Nick Markakis pop off the way that he did, and Dusty said that he must have eaten his Wheaties that morning.
Yeah, that's right. I'm glad you brought up Dusty Baker, because obviously it's a different personality, different guy, wasn't there. One of the stories that had emerged about Kyle Tucker last year was that he didn't necessarily fit the personality of a lot of the other Astros in terms of urgency or kind of the way he went about his business. Had you ever sensed that about Kyle Tucker? And do you think that maybe Dusty Baker might be a good influence him in a way that perhaps AJ Hinch couldn't influence him?
I hadn't noticed that, but I can understand it, just because Kyle Tucker is so much younger than everyone else on that team. I mean, when you look at, he was drafted the same year as Bregman, but he was drafted out of high school. Bregman was drafted out of LSU. So it could just be a youth thing, where he's maybe trying to ease into things a little bit, and everyone else is a big leaguer who is an established big leaguer, and now all of a sudden that they kind of know what it takes more to succeed at that level than Kyle Tucker does. I don't know if Dusty Baker will have an impact on that. I really don't. I did see him and Dusty Baker talking with each other at one point yesterday during that live BP. Dusty's kind of just making the rounds every single day as he tries to get to know everyone.
You know what? That's a really good point just about the age difference. And it makes me think of the Astros and some of the complaints from within the clubhouse before they brought in Brian McCann and, Carlos Beltran to kind of bring a certain veteran presence there. I guess it could be as simple as just the onboarding of taking a young guy and really letting him know what it takes to make it in the major leagues.
And everybody likes him. So, yeah. I mean, you hear with some teams, and I know of one team where they had a top prospect, and the two best players on the team essentially kicked that top prospect out of the clubhouse. Hmm. They didn't like the way that he approached his business. There's none of that with Kyle Tucker. I mean, everyone likes Kyle Tucker. Everyone respects Kyle Tucker. I just think that it's one of those things where, as a young guy, you just have to understand what it takes to succeed at this level, because the big leagues are so different than minor league baseball. And it's one thing to be able to hit minor league pitching. It's one thing to come in prepared to play a minor league season, but a big league season is completely different.
And Adam Spillane has spent a lot of time around minor league baseball, so he speaks with experience. He is our reporter down there in West Palm Beach with the Astros at spring training. He's presented by Texas Bay Credit Union. Dusty Baker is going to meet with the media later this morning. Adam, we're going to catch up with you after that in the 9 o'clock hour, so we look forward to catching up with you again a little later.
Sounds good, Sean. Thank you.
All right, take care. Adam Spillane joining us from West Palm Beach.
I like the way he sounds like the Crash Davis of the sports media world there.
Adam Spillane?
The way you said he spent a lot of time around the minor
leagues.
He did.
Didn't he say yesterday he spent 10 years doing broadcasting?
10 years doing play-by-play for one of the Broncos?
Some team in Colorado, the Rockies, yeah.
I wonder if he's got any good stories like Crash Davis from Bull Durham. Did he bed Susan Sarandon or the equivalent?
Adam Spillane?
Yeah.
He wasn't a player, so that might be difficult. I don't know.
I know, but I'm saying I'm making the Crash Davis comparison.
Yeah. That's...
What are the equivalent of, I don't know, maybe the AAA press corps had like a Susan Sarandon type that just was a groupie of those guys.
That could be.
From Spillane.
Bull Durham was in 1984. The broadcasting genre has evolved over time. Maybe he was the one the females wanted to go after.
I know the athletes these days, when they travel on sports, especially where they might have a little bit more downtime, Instagram and Facebook and whatnot has made the meeting up with other friendly people a lot different.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A lot easier.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Just a lot easier.
I remember I went
right there on the buffet.
One of my friends that was coaching a small college rugby team, mm-hmm. and I went to go visit, I went to go watch it at Ohio State. So it was this, and I'm like, I'm looking around, and I'm like, how do you guys have so many female fans here in Ohio when your school is in the South? And he was like, I don't know, these kids, I don't know, they meet each other on Instagram. And then
Good
it wasn't
times.
Like groupies or anything. I'm not saying like, you know, it was just they meet people from other places. And it's a different world out there.
It is, no doubt. We're excited to bring you the Sports Radio 610 Best Bugs Tour presented by Coors Light. That's right. We're spending the next 7 weeks going to the best crawfish restaurants in all the Houston area. We want you to participate in this, obviously, in being at all these events, but we want us, or we want you, to let us know where we should go. Comment on our social media. Use the hashtag #BestBugs. It's crawfish season, so let's do this thing here, this Best Bugs Tour. Today at 1:45 on In the Loop, they're going to unveil where next week's Fat Tuesday kickoff party is going to be. It's going to be a lot of fun. You won't want to miss that. It's the Sports Radio 610 Best Bugs Tour presented by Coors Light. We'll get to Justin Verlander here in a second. Interesting text from a listener about the Astros. Sean, how about due to the scandal, the Astros might be able to keep this group together? From a contractual standpoint, sum it up, Correa slash others, cheaper contract now, keep everyone and dominate. I think the implication there, Seth, is that this cheating scandal has somehow stained these players to where teams might be skeptical about their production. Here's the thing about that. When it conveniently fits the opposing team's narratives that the Astros cheated for the last, quote-unquote, 3 years, including 2019, they'll gladly put that out there to besmirch the Astros further than they've already besmirched themselves. I'm not absolving the Astros of cheating. I'm just saying they're being accused of cheating for longer than everybody seems to have said under the oath of immunity that they cheated. So when it's convenient for them, for the other 29 teams to use, hey, they cheated this whole time as a narrative to fit 2020, that's cool. When Carlos Correa becomes a free agent or George Springer becomes a free agent, if they're still putting up the same numbers that they put up from 2017 to 2019, they will get gigantic contract offers from other teams.
Mookie
Betts. It's a nice thought, Texter, but it's the hypocrisy of these teams will be revealed when these players become available.
You know what, and it's really interesting. As much as everybody is saying that Manfred completely botched this and is it a disaster and all of that, I wonder how much of this is exactly how Manfred would have wanted it, at the very least. Obviously, he might not want himself to be the focus of derision along with the Astros, but it's so much better when it's just one team. And look at the Red Sox investigation just keeps getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. Supposedly, we'll have an answer on that by what, next Friday?
Yes.
Next Friday. So it's very nice for Major League Baseball to really focus and be able to talk about the dastardly Astros. When the Red Sox and the Yankees were investigated in the very same season, Yankees were pinched for something that had happened in a prior season. They were punished.
They got fined, both of them.
And it's also really important to remember that the Astros investigation was the only one released thus far that had actual players who had been given immunity so talked. There's the only one, there's a Mike Fiers attached to it. So we have a lot more detail. And it's really nice for baseball if this is all about the Astros.
Yeah.
Because
Then it's quarantined.
Yeah, a whole
it's
lot
It's not
of,
the coronavirus.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
They're trying. That's what they've done. They've put, just like you see these images in China of them putting up these concrete block walls on these mountain roads.
That's the Astros.
That's what Manfred's out there with a trowel building up these walls.
Got him jammed on a cruise ship in the middle of West Palm Beach.
Don't try to drive to San Antonio today. There is a masonry wall being constructed to keep the coronavirus from escaping.
I think, Seth, that when we talk about criticism of Manfred, and I actually jumped in and did a segment with Wade and Clint yesterday at the end of their show because we were up here for the party, and the topic was the commissioners of the three major sports and how they've handled each of their respective issues, fiascos, whatever you want to call it. Goodell with the Kaepernick stuff from a couple years ago, Silver with the China stuff from Daryl Morey's tweet, and now this with the Astros and sign stealing. And we kind of power ranked them. I don't necessarily want to do that, but it raises the point when they brought up other commissioners and you bring up Manfred and the criticism that he's taking. And you, I think, bringing up a great point that this is probably playing out how it could possibly be playing out how Manfred wants it to, because I think all three of these commissioners go into it knowing that criticism and accepting the criticism is maybe their number one job function.
Yeah.
Being the lightning rod is their number one job function. So all this criticism Manfred's getting, this is why I'm not concerned about him doubling back and adding more punishment on, as some seem to think he may do, is because I think these guys all go into their role knowing that they're getting paid these gargantuan salaries because the number one job function they have is to be the magnet for criticism in their sport, accept it, own it, wear it, and move on.
Do you think there's a part of Manfred that's looking at Goodell and thinking, $32 million per year. He's making $32 million
What's
per
Manfred
year.
What's Manfred make?
I'm trying to figure it out. It's harder to find. They don't have... You ask Goodell and it pops right up, and I guess because it's probably...
It's newsworthy.
The most newsworthy is whenever... Whenever anything happens with Goodell. Right. I can't believe you're paying him $32 million a year.
Right.
That's crazy. But then when I just pipe in Manfred's salary, I just get all these, you know, those weird net worth salaries that always pop up?
Oh, yeah.
That you should never trust what people for some reason do.
Celebrity net worth.
Whenever you Google anybody, it's like if I Google Aaron Boone, there'll be a like, what is Aaron Boone's net worth and everything. And based on nothing at all,
right.
They'll be like, oh, it's $478 million.
Right. And yet I've probably stated it as fact on this show at some point for somebody.
Speaking of somewhat related, in my defense of Jose Altuve, one thing I've noticed on the internet and social media is that as long as there's a Twitter account that says, like, true facts, people will believe that it's an actual fact.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll retweet it many times.
They'll believe not just a fact, but a true fact.
Yeah, I think I'm going to start some Twitter account called, like, Verified Facts or something.
You should.
And do nothing but fake facts about how the Astros did nothing wrong in 2017.
See what happens, man. It's worth a shot. Justin Verlander met with the media yesterday. Of course, Justin Verlander does not have his running partner, Gerrit Cole, with him. This season, they were a great dynamic duo at the top of the rotation the last couple years. Justin Verlander talked about overcoming the loss of Gerrit Cole.
We're getting Lance back. Everybody kind of forgot that, you know, Lance was an all-star pitcher and one of the best in baseball before he injured himself. So, you know, we had him back. You know, we got Grinke, who's a Hall of Famer. I mean, you know, I think we're still pretty set with talent. I love our team. I love our rotation. I mean, it's like I said, you can't replace Garrett, but you also, you know, you can't forecast anything. You don't know, I mean, what some of these young guys can turn into or can be. I mean, nobody knew that Garrett was going to be as good as he was when he got here. So we'll see what happens.
Lance McCullers is a gigantic X factor for this team. Justin Verlander is their most important and most valuable player, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because if Verlander reverts back to what he was 5-6 years ago, you know, if age just starts to set in, and it's going to set in at some point, just hopefully not in the next 2 years, Verlander needs to have a Verlander year for them to do what they did or come close to what they did last season. McCullers is a gigantic X factor, though, in terms of being able to go, okay, we're not going to get what Gerrit Cole gave us last year. He was 20-5. He was an automatic win from the middle of literally the most automatic pitcher that I've ever seen in my life from May on.
Well, and I think it's fair to say that I don't know if the Yankees will get what we got out of Cole last year. It was just such a ridiculously dominant stretch.
Right.
That's not saying Cole's going to become a mess or anything. That was just an absurdly, absurdly dominant stretch.
Yeah, how do you replicate that? How much of that had to do with Gerrit Cole's really good. I mean, but how much of that had to do with the Astros, their methodology, Brent Strom, all the video stuff and everything? Maybe the Yankees are doing some of that same stuff. I have no idea. But Lance McCullers, in terms of looking at the team, Seth, and going, okay, Cole was 20-5 last year. The Astros, you know, if you take an average pitcher, that means the Astros are probably losing 8-10 wins, something like that. So how do you get off of them just being – how do you get off of Cole being replaced by something average? And I think part of it is going to be you'll have Greinke for a full season. You didn't have Greinke for a full season last year. They won 107 games, so you'll have Greinke for a full year. If you can get Greinke – I'm just using very rudimentary old-school stats, but if Greinke is – you know, if Greinke's what Keuchel was – in 2017, you know, Greinke is a, you know, 14-7 high 2, low 3 ERA guy. Then that's perfect. And then McCullers is the guy though. McCullers is where you can really make up some of that gap. Like McCullers isn't going to pitch enough innings early in the season, I don't think, to actually get baseball box score type wins. But if McCullers pitches like a pitcher that he was in the first half of 2017, the Astros are going to be in great shape because by the end of the year, he's going to be a 5 or 6 inning guy. You hand it over to the bullpen, that sort of thing. If you head into the postseason with Verlander being Verlander, Greinke being Greinke, and McCullers being 2017 first half McCullers, then I think the Astros are going to be in pretty good shape if the lineup is doing what we expect them to
do. Well, and I think that's where, you know, with McCullers, it's simply all about health. It's interesting that Lance hasn't had nearly the fan anger that Correa's had about his durability issues. And I think maybe it's because that Lance didn't have the same level of commotion or excitement about him that Correa did. Correa was the chosen one.
Number one overall pick.
And Correa's an everyday player. So you notice it and miss it a lot more when he's out. Where with Lance was, I don't want to say a pleasant surprise, because obviously he was a very highly regarded prospect.
Second round pick, yeah.
But he... it wasn't the same amount of hoopla that there was for Correa. And then Lance also, I mean, Lance pitched with a torn UCL.
That's the biggest thing. He got a lot of street cred for doing that.
And boy, the 24 straight curves, the ALCS, yeah, all of that.
He had moments.
People haven't, and with pitchers, I think it's also just kind of goes with the, I guess you're just, you expect, okay, a guy's going to get a Tommy John or a guy's going to have pitching issues. But this would be the first year for Lance, obviously, is he approaches free agency within a couple of years, he's got to put together some healthy seasons.
Yes.
You know, he's just flat out got to do it for his own benefit. But it would be awesome if this was the year that he did it. I know he's going to fight it tooth and nail, but they got to limit his innings because he's coming back from Tommy John.
Yeah, I'm excited for Lance McCullers this year. One more from Verlander. Verlander talked about 2014 yesterday. If you go back and look at Verlander's numbers in 2014, I would love to go back and just see what people were saying in Detroit about Verlander. Verlander in 2014, Seth, was coming off five straight All-Star seasons. He was 2 years removed from being the Cy Young winner and the MVP of the American League in 2011. He was, well, 3 years removed. 2 years removed from being a runner-up for the Cy Young Award and eighth in the MVP balloting. And then in 2014, he hit his rock bottom as a premier pitcher. 15-12, 4.54 ERA. He led the league in earned runs given up. He wasn't himself. He was 31 years old. He didn't make the All-Star team. He went on to not make the All-Star game for four straight years. He talked about coming back, and now he's bounced back to be one of the two or three best pitchers in baseball. Here's Justin Verlander on bouncing back from individual adversity.
2014 was a very tough year. I mean, not that the competitiveness faded, but my ability to compete at a high level just it was difficult. It was mentally draining. Just not being healthy and trying to fight through it for myself, for the Tigers at the time, and just hearing everybody say I was done, and it wasn't easy. So I had a few more years left on my contract too, and I just remember thinking, like, looking at the end of that and being like, how the hell am I ever gonna pitch till the end of this contract? I mean, it hurt, and I mean, it just wasn't healthy. So I look back at that now as kind of a necessary evil for my career. I learned a lot about my body and my process through that, and I'm just fortunate that I didn't severely hurt myself during that time and was able to come out of it better on the other side.
Well, I think that's the one thing that's been consistent, and it cropped up a little bit this year. Verlander was having when his groin is bothering him, it affects his mechanics, and he's kind of figured it out to this point. The silver lining of all those issues that he had in 2014 and 2017, I think, was the other real bad year for his groin. He recognized and realized now there's times where he'll recognize a change in his mechanics before he even necessarily realizes there's an issue with his groin or lower half. But then he knows that that change in the mechanics is caused by tightness that he hadn't even kind of consciously recognized yet, and he fixes it. And that's like above and beyond all the other stuff that the Astros have done. His ability to dial down his sleep and his nutrition and all of that, I think it's just been huge for him. That's why he preaches getting, what is it? Is it 12 hours of sleep a night? It's something absurd
that
doesn't even
hours.
Seem possible.
I know J.J. Watt is a big 10 to 12 hour a night
I think
guy.
It was Verlander that taught Bregman to get 12 hours. I mean,
it was definitely Verlander. Yeah.
But I think it was, I remember the number being something ridiculous and seemingly impossible for somebody with a normal
right,
job.
Something that you and I do in like 3 days cumulatively. Yeah. Verlander was 10-8 with a nearly 4 ERA when the Astros traded for him at the end of August in 2017. So you're right. Even in the first half of 2017, he was looking somewhat washed. And not nearly to – he didn't look nearly like a guy who teams should be paying $28 million for.
Well, and that was right at the point where a guy is in his mid-30s, approaching his mid-30s, and you would think, okay, well, this is what happens, soft tissue injuries, right?
Yeah.
So if I were to look at – if I were to forecast – and honestly, if you took another pitcher right now who was 33 or 34 years old and was having those same issues, I would probably say, well, you can't really trust that this guy's going to do it on into his 40s because it's a soft tissue injury and that's what happens. So aside from all the mechanical things that he's tweaked over the years, him getting his body dialed in right has been by far the biggest.
He led the league in starts and innings pitched last year at age 36. So that's a little scary. If you're an Astro fan, that's puffing your chest out like we've been saying, hey, look, we don't care about all the haters and things like that. They're going to come back. They're going to be great this year. You almost avert your eyes from Verlander's season last year, Seth, if you're a believer in age and regression and things like that.
Well, yeah, but we've already been through all this, right? Like, there's kind of a hump you got to get over, and then it's almost the same way. There's a stat where if you make it to age 80, you've got a really good chance of making it to 95.
Yeah.
When you look at average ages and whatnot,
yeah.
I think with pitchers, physiologically, there's almost a, hey, if you're really productive when you're 35, 36, there's a really good chance you're going to be one of these guys that ends up pitching till you're 41 or 42.
That's interesting, because I can think of the ones who have, you know, Roger Clemens, Randy Johnson, those are guys that fit that mold. I'm wondering, but we think of them because they fit that mold. They were successful.
There's a, it's more, because we went over the list. I think, did you and I, or you and Landry got into a big argument about this last year? I can't remember who was on which side or what, about whether or not you could trust that Verlander was going to pitch into their 40s or early 40s.
No, I thought he could. I'm saying for the sake of the 2020 season, as far as things that could go wrong. No, I was in favor of giving Verlander a contract extension.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because we were talking about his extension. That's right.
Yeah. So I was in favor of giving him a contract extension. All right. Let's. We got John McClain, who's going to join us from Florida, and he just texted me. He said everybody's talking. He's gone to multiple spring training sites down there. He said all people are talking about is the Astros.
All right, we're going to give John. Now, if John is not dialed in, if John starts saying things like some of these other non-baseball writers have been saying about things, we're going to have a talking.
This is what he you want to hear what he texted?
Yeah, let's see.
He said, Sean, I'll be ready at 8. I'm up on all the Astros stuff. Everywhere I've been in the Fort Myers area the last 4 days, people talking about Astros.
Okay, good. He's got to be.
B-O-U-T, that's what he said.
He's got to start. Since he's not a baseball writer, he doesn't have to try to maintain some kind of impartiality. He needs to be our voice of reason regarding Jose Altuve. He needs to be going around telling everybody, like, well, you know, you got to pay attention to Altuve because he didn't do it.
We'll give him that assignment. He'll join us at the top of the hour. Let's do headlines. So the first headline is Texans related, and apparently Bernardrick McKinney, Seth, had ankle surgery this offseason. Among the many Texans getting cleanup surgery, and that's what we're hoping this is just cleanup surgery. Bernardrick McKinney, inside linebacker for the Texans, undergoing surgery on an ankle.
When did he do it?
When did he get the surgery?
Yeah.
Doesn't say in the article here, but it just says that he underwent some ankle. Let's see. Underwent ankle surgery, according to league sources, not authorized to speak publicly. This feels like, yes, it's an Aaron Wilson article.
Yeah.
So it's an arthroscopic procedure. He's expected to make a full recovery in advance of next season.
Justin Reed's had a lot of injuries and surgeries for a guy as young as he is.
He has.
I shouldn't say surgeries. Just a lot of. He's played through a lot of injuries.
Played through a lot of stuff. This is McKinney with the ankle, but here is, speaking of Justin
Reed.
We have audio from Justin Reed also here. Okay, so McKinney got the ankle surgery.
All right.
Here is Justin Reed with an update.
Shoulder's holding up good. I actually just got out of the sling today, so I'm making the right steps and getting recovered and getting ready for next season.
All right, so an update from Justin Reed on him, Bernardrick McKinney, ankle surgery.
There's too many surgeries flying around here in the room.
Yeah. Are these things, you're a former player, a lot of these things just sort of cleanup type stuff?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, it could be cleanup. It could be something drastic. We don't get a whole lot of detail on it. And usually if you hear about it in January, February, it's something like a guy was playing with and their loose bodies and you get that cleaned up. Sometimes you start looking forward to the end of the season when you get to kind of, it's almost like you're getting your oil and lube done.
Yeah.
You just put me up on the rack and tweak me. Yeah.
A tune-up.
Check my, don't try to sell me the air filter just because it looks a little dusty on the outside.
Oh, dude,
I'm not some grandma walking in here that you're going to screw over.
Or Sean Pendergast. Yeah. I buy the air filter every time.
Look at this.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. I'm the worst. I'm the absolute worst. Drew Brees, he doesn't buy the air filter. He's experienced. He announced on Instagram that he is returning.
Well, yeah, I mean, you should do it every time. It's the fuel filters. I don't know.
Seth, whatever they offer me, I buy.
I trust
everybody. I walk in with the word sap hanging over my head. Drew Brees announced on Instagram, Seth, that he's returning for the 2020 season. So this now creates multiple ripple effects. I would say the Saints are one of the four or five teams that you can say are among the favorites to win the Super Bowl, certainly among the favorites in the NFC to go to the Super Bowl next year. This also creates potentially two available quarterbacks on the market, Teddy Bridgewater and Taysom Hill. What kind of deal do you think Teddy Bridgewater winds up getting?
I think that Teddy Bridgewater, I know that somebody floated out there $30 million or so.
That's nuts.
I feel like it does a disservice to Teddy Bridgewater's agent because I don't think he's going to get offered $30 million. I think he'll get.
How do we know it's not his agent that's putting it out there?
Because that actually doesn't. I mean, it's because I don't think it benefits Teddy Bridgewater. Maybe it puts it psychologically into that category. But I think that he probably ends up getting the low 20s on something of a shorter deal. And there's still health. issues and concerns, you know, with Teddy Bridgewater.
Like a Case Keenum Bronco deal, like 2 years, $38 million or whatever it was.
Coming back from that horrific injury, I don't think you want to see a full body of work out of him.
True.
Though, the thing about Taysom Hill is he's a restricted free agent. So unless teams are out there actually wanting to trade draft picks for Taysom Hill, I think he's going to do the restricted free agent deal, a one-year deal for whatever the number is this year.
Yeah, whatever the tender. So Drew Brees back in New Orleans. Greg Olsen, who was let go by the Panthers earlier this offseason, and I think a lot of folks see him as a guy who's got a future in broadcasting. He's actually done a little bit of broadcasting while he's been injured and on bye weeks. He is signing a one-year, $7 million deal with the Seattle Seahawks, $5.5 million guaranteed. Olsen visited and negotiated with Buffalo, Seattle, and Washington, left feeling most comfortable with the Seahawks, and I can't say I blame him. Washington, an abject disaster. Buffalo, you're talking about playing in some really cold weather with a quarterback that we're still not totally sure is a guy who can get you deep in the playoffs. Seattle, Seth, is to me, I know they were the 5 seed in the NFC last year. Look, they were 5 inches away from being the division champions in the NFC West. Seattle is still one of those teams with Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson that I feel like is always going to be at or near the top of the list for guys like Greg Olsen who are ring chasing late in their careers.
Well, and I think the guys like Olsen, these older tight ends, become very crafty, and whatever they lose in athleticism, they pick up in learning how to manipulate zone coverages. They pick up in learning how to manipulate safeties down the seam. And for a guy like Russell Wilson, Russell Wilson has followed the trajectory that you want out of a quarterback. When you have a young mobile guy that can use his legs a lot, you're always just hoping that by the time he gets to his second big contract and his third big contract, he's become more of a pure NFL passer. And Russell Wilson has done that. And along the way has become a lot craftier. I think that he can use Greg Olsen in a way that a lot of other teams couldn't use Greg Olsen, just because they'll be on the same page mentally.
So LeBron James, we have not gotten to LeBron yet. LeBron did not have any real takes on something like China back a couple of months ago, and Daryl Morey tweeted on it. In fact, he encouraged Daryl Morey to become more educated on the issue of China and then denounce free speech. LeBron took his free speech for a test drive yesterday, Seth, crossing over in sports and giving his opinion on the situation in baseball, in which two tweets he said, "Listen, I know I don't play baseball, but I am in sports, and I know if someone cheated me out of winning the title and I found out about it, I would be bleeping irate. I mean, like, uncontrollable about what I would or could do. Listen here, baseball commissioner. Listen to your players speaking today about how disgusted, mad, hurt, broken, et cetera, this is. Literally the ball." With a baseball emoji after
Did he actually say, "Listen here, baseball commissioner"?
He did.
Wow.
Yeah, he did.
LeBron said
the ball is in your court. You need to fix this for the sake of sports. And then he does a hashtag that's about 80 characters long.
I feel like LeBron has an ego above and beyond what even the normal superstar ego is.
Oh, yes.
Just in a way, he's smart enough to not be outwardly, you know, brazen about it or anything. But you can tell there's times where he kind of talks the way a young prince back in the days when princes could actually do something would, right? Like where kind of the world, in his mind, he feels like the entire world does revolve around him.
When he addressed Rob Manfred, not by name, but by occupation.
It
made me think of that song by Alabama, 40 Hour Work Week or 40 Hour Week. "Hello, baseball commissioner, gotta thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living, just to send it on down the line." It's a song by Alabama that addresses all the blue-collar jobs across the country.
Oh, okay.
"Hello, Pittsburgh steel mill worker, let me thank you for your time." It sounded like that. Trust me, people who listen to Alabama know what it is I'm talking about.
Rob Manfred makes $22 million a year.
Oh, you found out?
Yeah.
Somebody told you?
So much like the steel worker of Western Pennsylvania.
Right. "Hello, Detroit auto worker, let me thank you for your time."
So
LeBron is exercising his free speech.
Astros Future, at Astros Future on Twitter, found this article from Jeff Passan in 2017. To help LeBron kind of get the mindset of what baseball was like in 2017. This is Jeff Passan writing for, I believe, in 2017 for Yahoo Sports. The entire charade is patently absurd. He was talking about the Red Sox-Yankee scandal. The entire charade is patently absurd. Almost every team in baseball blurs the line of cheating on a daily basis. Yeah. Executives, coaches, and Major League Baseball personnel told Yahoo Sports on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so
now
there
he's
you
a,
go, Jeff Passan.
Now he's a clubhouse detective. Altuve took his shirt off. Bum, 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 bum. This is an interesting one out of, I guess, out of our business in some way, in the radio business. The Oakland Athletics, who have led a nomadic existence on the Bay Area airwaves, pulled the plug on radio on Tuesday, announcing that their games will only be available online. The A's could have returned to KTRB, the station they teamed with just before the start of last season after they had an ugly split with 95.7 The Game out there, but instead chose to expand their use of a streaming service called TuneIn. We all are aware of TuneIn.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently the author of this article is not aware of it. The team launched A's Cast on the service last season. Though the method of delivery is different, the voices are not. They'll continue to employ the same broadcast team. This is interesting. Will this allow them to curse on their broadcasts?
Oh, yeah, because it's not FCC regulated right. The same way. I would imagine Major League Baseball doesn't want them to.
No, but, you know, there are times where cursing can accentuate emotion.
You were not going to get as worked up about it if you catch it on the... I mean, you still have to do worry. Like, ideally,
kids are listening,
right.
Yeah.
I will say, I think that actually... It's not good in the short term. It might be good in the long term. Look, if you don't listen on our radio.com app, it's pretty damn cool.
Right.
You can hit pause and rewind and jump to different spots and everything. It's like a DVR for your radio. So I used to be able to get away with saying like, oh, I never said that. Can't do it anymore.
Right.
Because people will actually be like, wait a second, rewind. You did say that,
There's
Seth.
A lot of accountability on that on that app.
Now, to be sure, usually I'm honest when I say I didn't say that. In my mind, right. I believe that I didn't say that. But now people can fact check me more easily.
Yeah. What percentage of time do you feel like when you say I didn't say that, you actually did say that?
There's a really good chance that it's almost always, usually. In my mind, I said a certain thing. That's why I empathize with Jim Crane when he kind of contradicted himself in that press conference, because I think the first time that he said that he didn't think it gave them an advantage, I know what he was trying to say,
right. But
he just didn't come out right. So a minute later when he claimed that he didn't say that, I've been there before.
Yeah.
Like, because in my mind, no, I didn't say it that way. I said it the way I was thinking it in my brain.
Right.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.